It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's time now to welcome in our sports guide, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus Bob Dvorak, whose latest book is Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State, and the Culture of Silence. He has a video blog you can check out called Sportsnet. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Football season is here. The Pitt Panthers football team opens a new chapter in the university's athletic history, inaugurating the school's entry into the Atlantic Coast Conference by taking on Florida State on Labor Day night at Heinz Field. What does this mean for Pitt athletics?
Oh, this is huge. This is monster. This is not just a new season. It's a new era because they've gone in football to one of the elite conferences in the United States. The schedule's phenomenal. Beginning with Florida State. In basketball, you know, with all the success they've had in the Big East, Jamie Dixon now really joined some powerhouses in the ACC. But this positions Pitt in a conference and means financial security for this institution for many years to come.
There has been a lot of negative news coming out about college football during this offseason, not the least of which has been the Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Manziel's scandal for allegedly being paid for signing autographs. And this is something that has raised the whole issue of pay for play. These players are in the NCAA, which is making a lot of money off of their names and likenesses, and yet they can't make any money themselves. Is it right? What should be done going forward?
Do you remember when sports used to be about sports?
Mm-hmm.
Me neither. No, it's if you concede the fact that college football, college athletics are a cesspool of corruption, which they seem to be because the oversight is so haphazard, lacking, and out of date, it brings up a lot of issues that are clouding what's happening on the field. I mean, the Manziel case is, you know, absolutely fascinating from a legal point of view. Sure, he signed documents that say he's an amateur in the NCAA and the school owns his rights. But how could you not own your own autograph? How could you not make money off of your own signature? So, you know, this is going to open another can of worms after, you know, 20 other cans of worms have been opened recently.
The NCAA's Division I Board of Directors recently discussed issuing $2,000 stipends for athletes, but they struck the deal down just last year because they weren't able to work out the details. So they were going to have this for the 2012 season. Then it didn't happen. The current Pitt Athletic Director, Steve Peterson, when asked about stipends last week at a press conference, said that Pitt supported the concept of stipends for athletes, and yet we're not seeing them. Why can't the two sides, why can't the NCAA and the athletic directors come to some sort of an agreement here?
Right. First, you have to agree with the concept that you're going to actually pay some people to play football in college. And let's face it, these players bring in millions and overall, billions of dollars is at stake in college football. So, but it seems to fall apart on the method of payment. I mean, you know, what's wrong with if you're going to pay a guy, give him $2,000 up front and let him decide how to spend it, or whether you give him a monthly allotment or a weekly allotment, like, Beaver Cleaver got his allowance from Ward.
So would this solve the problem if players got, say, a $2,000 stipend? Let's use that as the example. Would that keep them from taking money for things that they know, that the players know they should not be taking money for?
I don't think it solves anything, to be honest with you. I think it might mitigate some circumstances. It might be the fairest thing to do, but I think it just opens the door to other abuses. If you're going to pay $2,000, why stop there? You know, alumni and some fervent fans used to slip money under the table. I think this just gives them a green light to either resume or continue that process.
Well, there is there's a history behind this, and there was an article written in the Saturday Evening Post back in 1939. A writer by the name of Francis Wallace was talking about the University of Pittsburgh football program going back to, I guess it was the 1927 season, in which players were given a stipend of $500, a flat $500 fee, which did not include room and board. And if you translate that into 2013 dollars, it comes out to $6,799 in today's dollars, paid out over 10 months. So there's a history here. I mean, this has been done in the past, and it was done by none other than the Pitt Panthers.
Yes, they weren't the only school involved, but certainly they were one of the elite programs, so they got a lot of attention for it. Actually, one year I think the freshmen went on strike because they weren't getting enough, as much money as the upperclassmen. So, but it goes back to your point. There's nothing new here. Actually, when colleges allowed football to become part of their traditions, part of their universities, the next step after allowing football is to pay to get the best players, and players were lured to colleges and universities with the promise of pay. The NCAA was actually founded to tamp down some of these abuses and to get them out of the game, but you see how effective that's been. Now the NCAA itself is under attack from so many quarters for being ineffective in its police role.
It's kind of like that old joke in the Marx Brothers movie Horse Feathers, when Groucho plays the president of, I think it's Huxley College, and they're running low on money, and he has to decide whether to keep the football stadium or the library, and he says, burn down the library.
Exactly. Well, if, you know, it's almost, you know, I know football fans get upset and say, no, it's a clean game. It's inherently corrupt when there's this much money involved. It's just money has this corrosive effect, and the more money you see, the more money that has to be paid out. So I don't know where it goes. I think the best thing to do would be a bunch of really smart people to take a step back and look at this whole situation and come up with an intelligent, rational solution. That's impossible in America today with the political climate and the red states, blue states, everybody's backed up into a corner. You know, that's not going to happen. But that's really what's necessary to do this. Now, you mentioned that article in 39. Right around 1940, University of Chicago dropped out of the Big Ten and said, we're going to discontinue football because it has no place in an academic institution.
Well, on a bright college note, there's an item that appeared regarding Penn State, which we know Penn State has had its share of rough times of late. But they have on their campus an old rec hall. In fact, it's called Rec Hall, or short for Recreation Hall, where in the 1920s they built this bandbox for intramural and varsity sports. And it is a beloved building on campus, and they have decided – the basketball team has decided to return to Old Rec Hall for one game on December 14th. They're going to play a game there, and I'm wondering what you think of this idea and what it means. They're going to play Princeton at Rec Hall.
Yeah, if it was for more than one game, I think I'd be more impressed. Like, you could go back to a Hoosiers setting, you know, where the game was important, and there'd be some a smattering of fans on the balcony or in the bleachers. But let's face it, college arenas, college football stadiums, basketball arenas are nothing more than TV sets. They're there to get money from the alumni with luxury boxes, and the students get the seats. But they're there as TV sets because these products are all on television.
So you're even cynical about this?
I don't mean to be cynical. I think I'm more of a realist, but you know, maybe I know too much.
Maybe. Well, you did write the book, Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State, and the Culture of Silence.
I like your analogy about the inspector in the movie Casablanca. I'm shutting down this casino because there's gambling going on. I'm shocked.
You're winning, sir. And he's a winner in our book, Bob Dvorak, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus. Check out his video blog. It's called Sportsnet. Bob, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit a segment that you particularly enjoyed on the show, you can go to our archives at WESA.FM. There you'll find all of our past programs. That's WESA.FM. Thanks for listening. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This is 90.5 WESA.